Today's guest is Lynair Johnston, a LinkedIn coach, trainer, and marketing strategist. She has held multiple leadership roles in BNI chapters, including president and vice president, has been a grant writer for nonprofits, and currently runs WordWizard, a company that provides copywriting and LinkedIn services. With a big garden she tends to herself, her hobbies also include visiting botanical gardens, going to film festivals, and listening to podcasts.
Hi, yes, Sarah, it's great to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me here today.
As you are super into gardening, can you talk about what you grow in your garden?
Yes, 2 years ago, my husband and I moved from a big property with an orchard, greenhouses and many raised vegetable beds to a city property with no garden whatsoever. Because it's on a slope and the garden's at the bottom and I was left with a big pile of organic rubbish I couldn't get rid of, I built three Hugel beds to recycle it all. Now, if you've not heard of Hugel beds before, they're a recreation of the forest floor where trees fall and then they start to break down and other vegetation falls on top and rots too. So in an urban setting, we stack tree trunks and logs, branches, twigs, leaves and other green waste onto a big mound that actually breaks down over time too. And as it does so, it creates a raised bed that you can plant into. So in mine, I grow flowers and strawberries, grasses, salad vegetables and herbs as well. And they look really unusual, but they're quite beautiful in their own way. My husband likes having flowers in the house, so this year I'm growing lots of plants from seed that we can bring indoors. Flowers like dahlias, asters, irises, zinnias, chrysanthemums, and something new to me this year for the first time, gladioli too. But I love foliage plants, so I have lots of hostas and grasses in my garden too. And parts of it are very wet, so I have what I call the bog and another area that's called the swamp, and I grow plants there that love having wet feet.
For someone who recently took up doing LinkedIn for a company, what are the tips you'd give them and what would you want them to watch out for?
First, it's not about the company, it's about the audience, the clients and the potential clients you want to reach. So any posts you publish need to speak to their problems and how your company can help, not just promote, 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 which a lot of people do. If you're always trying to sell on LinkedIn, then I think you're missing huge opportunities. Second, it's important to have your staff or team members engage with your posts in a timely fashion. And by that I mean within the first couple of hours of the post going up, because that's how the post will get out to a bigger number of people, because only a fraction of your company page followers will see your posts in their news feeds. So let me give you an example. Recently, when we published a post from a company page for a client and engaged on it with comments from people with a combined network of around 25,000 people, the post received 48,000 views. This was just 3 weeks ago. When the company posted without any engagement from its own team, the post received around 1,000 views. It has about 2,000 followers of the company page. And this leads me on to my third point. Your team members need to all have high quality profiles, as they should because they're representing the company, of course. But they should also be active on LinkedIn in their own right, building their own networks and interacting with connections by engaging on their posts. So I know this isn't easy, and some people have poor profiles, others simply are too busy or not interested in LinkedIn, or often that's because they don't understand how it can help them. So it can be quite difficult as a company page admin. I do understand that. I've had it described to me as being a bit like herding cats. So as something to watch out for, I'd say don't put up a post and then just forget about it. Interact with those who are commenting so your posts get more reach. And another thing you can do is to engage on other people's content as the company page, which means the company's logo will show up in more places. That's good for building visibility and credibility for the brand.
Before becoming a LinkedIn coach and strategist, you were a copywriter. How well have those specific skills translated over into helping you with LinkedIn?
It was a natural transition for me, and one of the things I love most about LinkedIn is the fact that we can publish our own content. We have a voice on LinkedIn and can share our knowledge and our experience with others, which can be truly valuable, I think. Of course, you don't have to be a writer to do that. You can also use video for your content or present it graphically. Now, I'm not very good at either of those things, so for me, I get the best response to my content when I write rather than when I put together videos or share information through images. It's what I love to do most anyway, and it seems to me to get the best response.
What are the trends that you are currently seeing in LinkedIn?
The biggest trend I'm seeing with LinkedIn at the moment is the move towards profiles being much more visual. With the arrival of the featured section earlier in 2020, there's much more opportunity now to showcase videos, images, slideshows, links, and lots of other things. If you choose wisely, these all make your profile look much better, much more appealing, and they really add depth. Plus, you can add media to each of your experience and education sections too. So I think this is really important. Another trend is towards more frequent and better use of audio and video messages from within the platform. It's really easy to do this on mobile, and it has a much greater impact than just a written message. I get much better responses from people when I send them a voice message, for example. Stories. This feature's just arrived too, of course, and I think we'll see greater use of them, principally to help deepen relationships though, but they're new, so the jury's still out on the value of stories and how people will adopt this new feature and will use it. Newsletters are being rolled out too, and as a writer, I love the idea of this. It will help articles get a much wider reach, I've been hearing from other people. So I think we'll see a greater use of visuals, stories, and newsletters in 2021.
What struggles did you face while writing your book, Linkability?
The biggest barrier for most people who want to write a book is finding the time to do it. We've all got jobs and businesses, we have families and friends, and we have commitments that take up our time. And finding the space to spend time writing, which is a very solitary pursuit, can be difficult. And so I got over that by getting up 2 hours earlier every business day than I was normally. And that meant my mind was clear and I could work while it was quiet. There were no emails coming in or messages that I needed to deal with. I also found that writing while in the midst of a pandemic came with challenges. Not the isolation so much as the fear we've all been feeling this year. Many people have lost loved ones and we've all been gripped by the events surrounding us. So to try to force my mind away from all that and concentrate on getting my book done was pretty challenging at times, I have to admit. And I had to write a book that, despite the constant changes that LinkedIn serves up, will stand the test of time. Linkability is very practical, and I've included a lot of tips, but I've also tried hard to write about concepts that are universal. Things like the fact that the more you give and share on LinkedIn, the more you will receive. LinkedIn is a land of opportunities, it's true, but you have to open the door to those opportunities and walk through it by developing and nurturing relationships and helping people wherever you can. And that's what I try to do.
One thing that really strikes my curiosity is how social media managers or strategists get a good grasp of what their clients want. exactly what kind of questions does one need to ask them to figure that out in depth when the clients themselves aren't sure what they want?
That's a very interesting question, Yasser. And it's difficult when clients themselves don't know what they want. So part of our role as social media managers and strategists is to help them work that out, to identify what message they want to get across to their clients and their audience. But equally, it's important for us to know what our clients want to achieve through their social media activity, whether that's on LinkedIn or anywhere else. Do they want to promote their brand, be seen as an industry leader, bring in leads, develop relationships with potential clients, or something else entirely? Once they can identify that, and they may have more than one objective, of course, then you as the manager can help them develop content that works towards that objective. I believe that social media needs to be seen in the context of a company's wider marketing efforts. How else it communicates with its clients and what messages does it convey when it does. That then can underpin the social media content. But let me give you an example. A client of mine has been putting a lot of effort into case studies, which it publishes on its website. It's been approaching its clients to have them talk about what it's like to do business with them, how they work, and the problems they solve. By then showcasing the case studies on their website, it demonstrates the quality of their work, that their what their clients think of them, and that they're good people to do business with. Because let's never lose sight of the fact that we all do business with those we know, like, and trust. So any work we do on LinkedIn for our clients should always be done with that in mind.
You have changed industries as a journalist and as a writer quite often, from industrial relations to automotives. How are you able to cover them regardless of what industry you were assigned to cover? Don't these things require some in-depth knowledge beforehand?
I don't believe so, no, although I'm sure many people would disagree. Look, 5 years ago, I knew very little about LinkedIn. Now I'm ranked internationally as an expert. I've become that by spending hours and hours reading, listening, learning from those who are more knowledgeable than myself, and practicing what I learn. They say it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert, and I truly believe that to be the case. As a journalist, unless you're writing for an industry publication, you have to ask the questions that most people want to know about. So, for instance, when writing about cars, few people want to know the intricate details of how the engine works. They want to know what it drives like, how it feels to drive, and how it feels to be behind the wheel. And in general journalism, it's the same. Most listeners or readers won't have an in-depth knowledge of the subject. So asking very detailed questions is, in most cases, not very helpful. You can't use the information when you write because most people won't understand it. Of course, that's different when your audience is very educated and knowledgeable in the subject you're writing about. So in that case, yes, you do have to know your subject thoroughly.
What influenced you to train as a journalist when you were young?
There weren't as many choices in terms of work when I was young. There are whole industries that exist now that didn't back then. Anything to do with computers, for one. I didn't want to be a teacher like my mother, and I had no medical aptitude, so that ruled out nursing. And because I loved words and working with words, it was a natural move for me to go into journalism. I started out as a radio journalist and newsreader, and over the years I've edited and written feature articles for many different publications and magazines. But one thing I can tell you about being a journalist that was the most important thing to learn is never to be afraid to ask questions. As a journalist, you get to meet and ask all kinds of questions of people you might never ordinarily come in contact with. So that's been a very useful skill to have during my professional career, knowing that it's okay to ask questions.
feel free to talk about anything you wanna, and also let the audience know where they can find you on social media.
People can find me on LinkedIn, of course. My name's a bit hard to spell, but if you search under the hashtag WordWizard, you'll find me. Please follow me or connect to me there. I'm always happy to extend my LinkedIn network. I have replays of my webinars and interviews with other LinkedIn folks, experts often, on YouTube, and you can find those under on the channel WordWizardNZ. You can read posts, articles, and other documents about LinkedIn on my website, and that's at wordwizard.co.nz. And of course, my book, Linkability, Four Powerful Strategies to Maximize Your LinkedIn Success, is available at all major online bookstores in paperback, ebook format, and audiobook. Very soon, it'll be on Audible too. Thanks so much for having me on your show today, Yasar. I've really enjoyed it. You've asked me questions I've not been asked before, so thank you. And I hope we'll have a chance to talk again. Bye for now.